The Milwaukee Journal sent a Milwaukee Bucks podcast brunch edition, emergency brunch edition. Oh man, I want an emergency brunch right now. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. I am joined by Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter, covering your Milwaukee Bucks. He is in LAX right now, waiting to catch a plane after the Bucks defeat the Los Angeles Lakers late night, Friday night. If you went to bed early like I did, you missed some good stuff, and that was just the tip of the iceberg yesterday. Matt, when people get off the plane at LAX, are they singing that Miley Cyrus song, the Party in the USA? I feel like that would be kind of standard operating procedure.
I don't know about the rest of them, but that's me. That's 100% me. Like, I can't get it out of my head, like, even right now, and I got off the plane in LAX like 2 days ago. So you've totally pegged me 100%.
The real question is if you're wearing a cardigan and also a dream and a cardigan.
I got the dreams, no cardigans. I have to cut it off somewhere.
I totally understand. The Bucks had a nice visit to La La Land. Not only did they beat LeBron's Lakers with yet another ridiculously impressive showing. I believe we're up to 10 straight road wins with this team, if I'm counting correctly. And I might not be. I don't know. They also signed Eric Bledsoe to a 4-year, $70 million deal. And Bledsoe then went on to have a phenomenal game. 31 points, 9 rebounds against the Lakers. He just continues to be impressive. We got to start there. We could talk about the Bucks signing Paul Gasol as well at the end of this. And heck, I've got audio of Eric Bledsoe. We'll hear from him long before the contract business. We'll add that to the end. But the thing you asked Eric about was the timing of this. I mean, this did kind of pop out of nowhere. I'm sure the Bucks and Bledsoe have been talking about this, but when you saw it drop yesterday, I mean, do you have any insight as to why now, other than it just, I guess, was the time where everybody was happy with it?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's really the kind of long and short of it, is that, you know, both sides wanted to commit to each other. And, you know, I assume and I believe they've been working on it, you know, and asking Eric after the game. He says, hey, why not? Like, you know, we're building something great here, and we got a young, talented team, and he wants to be part of it. And so, you know, I think that being able to kind of wrap that up for both sides was something that, you know, it declutters the off season. Obviously, the Bucks, 4 of their 5 starters plus Nikola Mirotic, are you know, are going to be free agents this summer, and so trying to sort that out as much as they can ahead of time, it, you know, can help. And so I think being able to do that clears things up, and obviously now they can focus on Chris Middleton, who I assume and believe, and it's been reported, is their next focus, you know, and then they'll have to figure out how to stay under the tax, and maybe they can offer Brook Lopez a mid-level exception, because they can't offer him really anything else since they don't have his bird rights. Malcolm Brogdon's restricted, you know, and we'll kind of have to just keep going from there when it comes to all those free agents. But right now, Bledsoe's taken care of, and it seems like it's a deal of reasonable value.
Certainly. I mean, that definitely is what jumps out, that it is not a huge commitment beyond what anybody would expect, certainly. As far as, we'll talk more about Bledsoe here, but as far as the possibility of bringing all these guys back, I mean, it certainly seems like the math just won't add up, that somebody, one of the starters on the current team is not going to be here next year, and maybe they are able to bring Middleton back. It seems like that would make it very difficult to keep everybody else, Mirotic, you know, Lopez. Is there a scenario, you're kind of more acquainted with the financial gymnastics required to do all that stuff, is there a scenario where the Bucks could retain all their key contributors for next year, or is somebody going to have to be the odd man out?
You know, I think there's a couple things at play there. I think one, are the Bucks willing to pay the tax? This year, they're going to get in just under the luxury tax line, like just barely under. Like right now they're about 550,000 below it. And Tony Snell has a couple incentives that he could reach, which if he reaches them would put them like basically 46,000 below the luxury tax. So they're like just like right there. You know, but maybe next year, like if this team gets far enough in the playoffs and they prove that like they need to have these guys together, you know, maybe ownership green lights, you know, going into the luxury tax and paying that, you know, or at least, you know, when you go above the tax threshold, you know, you don't actually pay the tax until the end of the season. So before the end of the season, you could theoretically trade someone to get out from the tax. Sometimes you have to you know, attach sweeteners or do something that might involve giving draft picks or young players or whatever to incentivize another team to take those players. But you know, that's a question that remains out there depending on how they do. The other thing is really, you know, what bears out in the market. I think it'll be really interesting to see what Malcolm Brogdon commands in restricted free agency. He's having a great season. I mean, 50-40-90 is just something you don't see very often. And, you know, you probably look at him and say he's probably the fourth option on the Bucks on most nights. You know, he's had an impressive streak of double-digit scoring nights, had 21 against the Lakers, has been really solid all year long. He can create with the ball in his hands. He's shooting just really high numbers on catch-and-shoot threes. I mean, he's been very valuable. But if the Bucks are committing to, obviously, Giannis as their centerpiece, if they bring back Chris Middleton at somewhere close to a max or a max, which is totally within the realm of possibility, and they've already committed, you know, an average of $17.5 million a year to Eric Bledsoe, like, where does Malcolm Brogdon fit into that? I think, you know, how much – you can't just keep paying everybody, you know, $15 million plus and expect to be able to, you know, stay under the tax and all that. So, you know, how he's valued on the restricted free agent market, obviously the Bucks can match anything that another team, you know, throws out there. But how he's valued could depend – you know, could decide where he goes and what he does, because, you know, if some team wants to throw, you know, like, I don't know, 4 years, $80 million at him, I'm not, that's just literally a number that I just picked out of thin air. I don't think he'd be valued that high at all. But, you know, let's just say, for the sake of exaggeration, somebody had to throw that at him, like, the Bucks just, I don't know how they can match that. You know, but, you know, it'll really be interesting, because, you know, he's been great, like I said, and if he has, you know, this kind of performance in the playoffs, you know, then I could see some team definitely making a move to test how much the Bucks would be willing to spend. You know, and he, you know, I think he flourishes partly because he's the fourth option. You know, he's not always drawing the other team's best defender, but, you know, he's just bringing it on a nightly basis regardless of what the situation is. And he's been really impressive this year.
Going back to Bledsoe, the thing that jumps out at me is his defense. Obviously, he's a huge offensive contributor, but the thing we saw, and we've talked about this a little bit, a lot actually before on the podcast, a lot of people remember that Boston Celtics playoff series last year when Eric Bledsoe had a couple big defensive lapses, and I think that cemented a first impression for a lot of Bucks fans that he was not a bad defender, but a guy who wasn't going to necessarily give 100% effort. But that's just so far from the truth this year. I mean, he's we saw him at the end of the Sacramento Kings game, at the end of regulation, a defensive play he made that forced overtime. And, of course, the Bucks went on to win that game and yet another exciting road victory on Wednesday night. And then he seems to just bring it every night on defense. And I don't know if he's just – I guess there's no better demonstration that he's happy than signing this contract. But you already saw it, the way that the effort that he gave. Has he evolved as a player in your mind? Has he gotten better? Or is it just a situation where he's happy here? You know, we saw some discontent with the Suns and, of course, the famous tweet, "I don't want to be here." It seems like he's just loving it here and having a great time. Is that what you've observed as well?
Yeah, I think he is definitely, you know, loving it with the Bucks and, you know, loving his role and kind of everything's fitting right. When it comes to the defense, you know, he's been much better this season. He leads the team. I think he leads in the steals, definitely leads him in deflections. And, you know, it's one of those things where he does still have the lapses. Like, they're definitely not as often. They're definitely not as obvious as they've been in the past. But, you know, they still happen. And, you know, the difference is that he's actually responding to coaching and or he's just getting the coaching that he needs, where, you know, on Monday against the Bulls, I mean, he didn't play a ton. Nobody really played a ton. But Mike Budenholzer was on him. And, you know, Wednesday after the Kings game, you know, when he really, like, you know, saved the Bucks and had a triple-double, played incredibly well, had that huge defensive stop at the end of regulation. You know, I was talking to Bled about it, and he was like, yeah, you know, Bud got on me. Like, after that Chicago game, like, he was really challenging him to be better, to take more pride, to be that player that everybody knows that he could be. And, you know, he goes, hey, you know, like good on Bud for doing that and getting on me and pushing me to be better. And, you know, it definitely paid off on Wednesday. It paid off on Friday for sure. You know, and Bledsoe, you know, he was asked about it after the Lakers game too, about, you know, the fact that Bud isn't just, you know, somebody who's going to show the support. He's also going to push. And he says one of the things he appreciates most about Bud and that he's learned to appreciate over, you know, the past few months of working with him. He's like, man, as we're talking about this, I can just see his eyes all red with fire and kind of getting on me and all that stuff. And he's like, yeah, like that's the kind of coaching he needs. And he's responded to, and yeah, I know there were some people who questioned before the season, how Bledsoe would fit with Bud. Like Bud had a history with, you know, pushing point guards and, you know, maybe some, not the greatest relationships maybe, but in general, like, you know, it was tough, and he asked a lot of them, and you know, he asked them to be unselfish and move the ball, and it's not always about you, and play really hard defense. And, you know, so far, like, Eric Bledsoe has really responded well to that and has fit perfectly into that system.
And what an interesting stretch of games for him, because that Chicago game, Bledsoe is the de facto leader for a lot of that game, with Giannis not participating, and then the Sacramento game, there was a pretty clear minutes limit on Giannis, and he wasn't in there in crunch time when the Sacramento Kings made a late push to ultimately force overtime. But you saw some pretty big plays out of Bledsoe and some big shots, and then ultimately that, of course, helped the Bucks win in overtime. We'll talk about the Lakers game too, but just real quick, your thoughts on that game against Sacramento. Again, the Bucks win most of their games by 10 or more points, so you don't often get these nail biters, and the Bucks very much responding to a pretty big counterpunch by the Sacramento Kings late and able to pull that game out. You know, both of these games that they've just won, the Kings, the Lakers, those teams need these wins. These are not teams that are safely in the playoffs or safely out. Like, they need those wins, and the Bucks, who, let's be honest, they don't need these wins. They already clinched a playoff spot, in fact, as of last night. But they are going in there and they're still winning. They're beating really good teams. I mean, the Kings are fun to watch. What is your take? What was maybe one or two takeaways from that Sacramento Kings victory a couple nights ago?
You know, I thought it was a really fun game. I mean, I was excited that I was in a situation where the game was late. I didn't have to write on deadline as much. And I could just kind of appreciate it, enjoy it, and kind of roll with all the ups and downs, because it was a little bit of a wild ride. And, you know, the Bucks looked like they were about to put it away. They're up 14, like 6 minutes to go. And I was like, you know what? Like, is this one done? No, I don't think so. Like, the Kings are just too feisty and too fun and just too, you know, just too good, you know, to just kind of roll over. And you're right. They needed that win for sure. And so, you know, they roared back and, you know, even took that lead. Bledsoe comes in, gets the layup, gets the stop. And it was like, okay, game on. Like, this is fun. You know, they've said multiple times in the past that, hey, you know, we're all here for a reason. You know, we're all NBA players. We're good in our own right. And, you know, obviously Chris and Giannis are important, but, you know, we can take care of, we can take care of business too. And they really proved it, in that game. And it was a really, kind of tough environment too. I mean, the Golden 1 Center got really loud. You know, people were all in on that Kings team and on that game. And, you know, it's not an easy place to win, and not an easy situation to win. And the Bucks, you know, were just really impressive in the way they were able to handle that.
Staples Center wasn't so quiet either. And if you watch the highlights, lots of dunks, lots of great LeBron moments, great Giannis moments, and still the Bucks just have more at the end of the game. And it looked like LeBron James, who's you know, kind of been frustrated over the course of the season for a number of reasons, was pretty frustrated at the end of this game too. I mean, the Bucks again on a national stage. Granted, it's late at night, but in LA, lots of, you know, curious onlookers. Again, proving to people how fun they are and how capable they are. What for those of us who maybe went to bed early, not naming names, but you know, my name is on the list. What is one thing that we missed that you really will take away from that game?
You know, I think it was just Bledsoe. I mean, just the way that he was driving with confidence, you know, and just making things happen. I think he, you know, he really fueled them. You know, it was a game where the Lakers were really packing the paint against Giannis, making it hard for him to get good looks, open, you know, good touches inside. They were doubling hard. I mean, I could see the argument that some people had that maybe he didn't look the same. He didn't look totally right. Mike Budenholzer said maybe he was trying to get his win back a little bit after missing Monday's game, being limited in Wednesday's game. But I think a lot of it had to do with the Lakers really just selling out on him. And so that's when you need somebody like Bledsoe, a secondary playmaker, somebody who can, while the focus and the gravity is all geared towards Giannis, that he can drive the lane and get his own shots and finish. And so that was really huge for them. I think also Ersan Ilyasova had a fantastic second half. Kind of touch and go there in the first half for him. He didn't score. Had a couple of not really defensive lapses. Just wasn't really effective on defense. While the Lakers made a run and Brandon Ingram was going off. But in the second half, he came in and threw the challenge of guarding LeBron a lot of the time. And he also, made a bunch of shots. He came in, I think the Bucks were down 82-73. Giannis goes out, Ersan comes in. And I remember tweeting, like, all right, let's see how this goes. And a lot of people immediately were like, yeah, it's going to go bad. It's going to go poorly. This can't work. And the Bucks went on a 10-0 run. And Ersan was part of that. He ended up being in their closing lineup as the Bucks went small. The Bucks went small to match the Lakers, who had gone small a lot of the game, basically the whole game. And he handled LeBron duty, as best he could, tried to keep him in front as much as he could, and it was just a really solid performance from him. And obviously, Bud, has said multiple times this season, reiterated last night, that he has a ton of confidence and faith in Ersan. They've been together a while, and when there's a situation that he thinks they need. A two-way player, defensive stops, rebounding, hustle, all that stuff. Like he's going to err on the side of Ersan, and that, as he did last night, that faith paid off.
I love the expression "err on the side of Ersan." I'm going to try to use that in a sentence today, possibly regarding nothing that has to do with the Bucks, but we'll see if I can fit that in. You and others reporting Pau Gasol, who took the buyout with the San Antonio Spurs, is about to become a Milwaukee Buck. That was the big news yesterday before the Eric Bledsoe situation was announced. But I'm curious what you think his role would be with this team. I think there's maybe a little bit more enthusiasm than there needs to be for, no offense to Pau Gasol, but he's not going to be a regular contributor. His name is certainly bigger than maybe what his contribution level will be. But I think one of the takeaways a lot of people were honing in on is here's a guy who could really go anywhere he wants and chooses a winning culture in Milwaukee, and it doesn't matter how big the market is, etc. I think it's understandable why a player would choose the best team in the NBA, but what are your thoughts as far as where Pau Gasol fits into this picture?
I think ever since the Thon Maker trade, and obviously going back to the John Henson trade, the Bucks haven't had a backup center or a true backup center. Maybe you could argue that, they don't need one, or that they've been doing it by committee where, Ersan's played center, DJ Wilson's played some center, Giannis at the center lineups have been tried. Mirotić has nominally been the center at certain times since he got here. But they just haven't had that backup guy. They had Jason Smith as the kind of breaking glass in case of emergency guy who could play minutes at the end of blowouts. But they just haven't had a big body, a true physical center. And so bringing in a 7-footer, they have that guy in Gasol. Whenever he does sign, he has to clear waivers first, and the Bucks need to open up a roster spot. Obviously, the only reasonable choice for that would be to either let the 10-day contract of Isaiah Kanan lapse, or waive him ahead of time, and then clear that spot for Gasol. I don't know that there's necessarily a rush, to get him. Obviously, they have the back-to-back. They're playing in Utah tonight. You want to have the full complement of guys available in that scenario. Gasol won't clear waivers until Sunday, so I'm sure Kanan will continue on the trip with them. I think it just makes sense. And I haven't heard anything to the contrary yet, but I think do that and maybe say, hey, Pau, just join us in Milwaukee. Like that could probably be the most most reasonable plan. Give Kanan a couple more days, have that depth available and that player available off the bench. Kanan's played like every game since he got to Milwaukee, but actually he hasn't really spent any time in Milwaukee. He's only been with the Bucks on the road. So you know, I think Powell can be that backup center. Whether they use him as that backup center and play him a decent number of minutes, I would guess that they've probably communicated that they will. He had a very small role with the Spurs and something that you know, he wanted more, according to reports out of there. You know, that's why the buyout ended up happening. But you know, I think that he can definitely help on the court. You know, he fits what they do. He's a high character, high IQ guy who can, you know, who knows what he's doing on defense and can make some shots on offense. And he's also, you know, got that championship experience. I mean, I was just looking through the roster yesterday, and the only person on the Bucks' current roster who's even gone as far as the conference finals is George Hill, which he's done multiple times. He played in the finals last year, but this isn't like last year where they had Jason Terry, who had won a championship, and they had Matthew Dellavedova, who had won a championship, and those guys had been, like, you know, in big games and kind of communicate that and, you know, help kind of lead in the locker room. This year's team didn't have those guys, you know, other than George Hill. And now they have somebody in Gasol, or they will have somebody in Gasol, who has won titles and who is renowned as a great teammate. I'm excited because he's very well known as a great media guy. In 2015, he even won the PBWA's award for dealing with the media. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to good conversations with Powell. And, you know, I think the signing, you're right. Like it is a sign that the Bucks are, you know, in that right space. You know, you hope when you're a team that is in the buyout market, you hope that, you know, your success and your chemistry and your team can be enough to lure in that kind of veteran free agent guy who you hope can be, you know, a positive contributor for you. I know last year, you know, they wanted Ersan Ilyasova last year on the buyout market, and they didn't get him. You know, he ended up going to Philly and playing a pretty sizable role for that Sixers team as they went second round of the playoffs. And so, you know, you want to be in the hunt. I'm sure other teams were in the hunt. You know, for Gasol, obviously the news didn't come out until yesterday, but I have no doubt there were machinations behind the scenes for a while now. And so, you know, I'm sure other teams were interested and wanted his services, and the fact that he picked the Bucks is definitely a positive sign. And, you know, he, at the very least, will be a positive addition to the locker room going forward.
I did ask this on Twitter. We need to know if he and Mark have cats that hate each other, a la the Robin and Brooke Lopez dynamic, because there's a chance that the Gasols are going to meet each other in the Eastern Conference Finals here. A very good chance.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks might have, like, the record for the most older brothers of other NBA players in the NBA. I mean, Brooke will very much have you know that he's older than Robin by, like, a minute. And Powell, obviously, older than Mark. And then Giannis, you know, and Kostas. So, I mean, you've got a bunch of NBA siblings. Obviously, Kostas is with the Mavs, and the Bulls are not good. But we could have a Gasol brothers reunion, potentially in the Eastern Conference Finals, which could be fun.
The Bucks, very much the big brother in the NBA right now, still the best record in the league, 48-14, 2.5 games better than the Raptors, multiple games better than the Golden State Warriors. The Bucks will be in Utah on Saturday night. Very tough back to back. Wouldn't be a shock if Giannis was at least on a minutes restriction, if not out altogether. But hey, what are you going to say? A couple losses here is not going to hurt. They're not going to hurt the Milwaukee Bucks. They'll be in Phoenix on Monday. Matt Velasquez will be there along the ride. The Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. Thanks for joining us on an emergency brunch, Matt. We'll catch you again next week. Safe travels.
All right. Can't wait.
Let's kick it now to my conversation with Eric Bledsoe. I mean, full disclosure, this didn't happen recently. This happened a week and a half ago. So we're not talking about a new extension because I had no idea that was going to be in the conversation. So you can forgive the topics, but I thought you might want to hear from the Milwaukee Buck that's going to be here now for 4 years and one of the fixtures on this team. Because it's March, I wanted to talk about March Madness. I am, you know, very clearly a college basketball fan, and asked him a little bit about Kentucky, his days in high school playing against DeMarcus Cousins before they became college teammates. It's a short conversation, but again, the my very important questions series, where they are, of course, not very important questions, but hear a little bit from your now long-term member of the Milwaukee Bucks, Eric Bledsoe.
I'm with Eric Bledsoe, guard for the Milwaukee Bucks, and I want to start going back to high school. You obviously played at Kentucky with DeMarcus Cousins. I'm kind of curious, first of all, because you're both Alabama high school players, when did John Calipari kind of enter the picture for you? I mean, were you being recruited early on, or like when did he start coming to watch you play, or when did he start meeting with you guys?
That pretty much came late, especially me. You know, he was getting recruited by everybody in the country. You know, I wasn't.
Yeah.
I think once we played them in the semifinals.
Yeah.
That's when, you know, I really got noticed that game.
Really? So yeah. It was that game.
Yeah.
So you, the Floor is the team that DeMarcus plays for. They're nationally ranked, what, you know, top five, whatever it was, and you guys beat them in the semifinals. So tell me about that game. That's a huge win for you guys.
I mean, it was just fun, man. Playing against, you know, one of my closest friends, not at the time, but
yeah,
you know, right now playing against him, looking back on it, it was fun. For bragging right purposes, for sure.
Yeah. And I think your high school team went to the state semifinal and state final back to back years. Same team beat you both times. Who's on that team? How did that team catch you in both years?
I mean, they just had a great group of guys, man. They've been playing together for a while.
Yeah.
I only played at, you know, that my high school 1 year though.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
The following year. You know, they play in the championship. I actually have another school at that.
Oh, okay, okay, got it. So you were there for the semifinal, but you were there for the win over DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah,
that's
I was
the
there.
Important thing.
I was there, but you know, I came the next year.
Okay, when I don't know if Bucks fans realize that you have been in a dunk contest before. You got to do that in 2013. Tell me what you remember about that experience and how you prepared for it. I don't think people appreciate how good of a dunker you are.
I really didn't want to do it. I ended up meeting. I ended up talking to some people in my agency. He was my, you know, one of my closest friends at the time, Rich Paul. You know, he convinced me. And you know what really did it? You know, Jay-Z convinced me to do it too.
Jay-Z convinced me. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's what really, you know, put it over the top ones. Those two, you know, convinced me to do it because, like I said at the time, I didn't want to do it because I'd never been in a dunk contest besides that point.
Really? Yeah. So how you got to tell me how you came to be friends with Jay-Z or what, like how that relationship happened?
Well, no, I think I was a rookie. And yeah. He was, you know, he knew, you know, Rich Paul for, you know, okay. a while before then. And, you know, it was something happened when he was in town. And, you know, we went and ate dinner with him. And they was talking to me about it. And, you know, they convinced me to get in.
And you were 1 point away from the finals. As you look back on that, you kind of got robbed. Did you not get robbed a little bit?
I mean, some great dunkers in there, man. I couldn't complain. You know, at the end of the day, that's a history event. You know, I mean, you know, looking back, I'm always be remembered. You know, and being in a dunk contest, they're gonna always show that.
Yeah, and it's all online. It's all archived
for
anybody
who
wants
to see it. Yeah,
so
they're gonna always show it. So for me, that's a priceless moment.
How do you feel like your career shifted since then? You obviously get traded pretty quickly to Phoenix and then, you know, traded to Milwaukee a couple years after that. How are you different from the guy that was in that dunk contest?
I mean, honestly, you know, for my career, I got better every year. You know, every year I've been in the league. You know, obviously, you know, since I left Phoenix, my points are down, but, you know, you know, my production is, you know, way higher than it was. So,
yeah.
So in that aspect, I have got better and more mature, you know, more mature. And just playing with a lot of confidence, like I've always been playing my whole career.
The first, I believe it's the very first game with the Bucks, you threw an alley-oop. I think it was in San Antonio, to
yeah.
be honest.
Yeah.
What do you remember? I mean, does that stick out in your head? Like, it seemed like you had chemistry with him right away.
I mean, it was, but at the same time, I was just so happy to be back playing, you know, the sure. game that I love. You know, I set out for about 15 games. And just for me to get back on the court, you know, playing this game that I love, it was, you know, it was a blessing.
What is this year meant for you? It feels like you've taken, like you said, point production down, but like it feels like you've taken a huge step forward this season. Did it feel like that would happen at the beginning of the season, that this would be a big year for you?
I mean, every year I take it in sure. as a big year. You know, just the luck of the draw always kept getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I was having some career years, but, you know, now I'm healthy, you know, playing the best I probably, you know, could play.
Yeah.
And probably can get better. But, you know, and I think as a team, we just gelling, man. It's not just one person. You know, we all clicking it, you know, as one. And, you know, once you get a team like, you know, that, when everybody, you know, individually pick that game up and as a team collectively pick that pick the team up, it's hard to,
yeah.
You know, it's definitely a good place to be.
Do you feel like Coach Budenholzer and you, something about his coaching style allows you to do more things, opens up a little bit? Do you feel like you have sort of a, I don't know, an unspoken connection with the way he schemes things out?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I don't know if you can go back to my first year in Phoenix. We had this guy, Channing Frye.
Yeah, yeah.
He used to open up the floor so much that teams could, like, you know, pack the paint in on me and go around.
Sure.
So it kind of feels like that again, you know, where, you know, Brooke, you know, spacing the floor, Giannis, you know, and everybody's just spacing the floor and it's giving us so much space to play inside the paint instead of, you know, just jacking up a lot of threes and you can't play from, I mean,
right.
Playing from the two. We can get to the basket. If not, we can pick the defense apart. But it always just causes havoc getting in the paint, you know, when we want to. And it just feels like that, you know, again.
So I'll close it out where I started talking about Kentucky a little bit. I know you're only there 1 year, but do you follow that at all? They've got a pretty good shot.
Of course, that's always going to be like a home.
Yeah.
I mean,
they got a Wisconsin kid in the starting five, so.
I know. I mean, Kentucky can always, you know, be home, man. They got a great fan base, a great coaching staff. It's just everything. And, you know, I always go back during the summertime. You know, at least I try to.
Sure.
And, you know, play with the guys, you know, talk to coach a little bit more. You know, it just feel like home.
Thanks to Eric Bledsoe. Thanks to Matt Velasquez for joining me while waiting for a plane at LAX. He's headed to Utah for the battle with the Utah Jazz tonight. Again, tough back-to-back. I mean, if the Bucks win, you won't be surprised, but can they keep doing this? Like, how many road games in a row are they going to win, particularly on the West Coast back-to-back? This is about as tough as the schedule could get, and they just seem to pass test after test after test. What a night. What a day Friday was for the Milwaukee Bucks franchise, signing Pau Gasol, or at least being reported to be about to sign Pau Gasol, but then actually signing Eric Bledsoe to a 4-year extension, and beating the Lakers, beating LeBron on national TV had to feel good. So hopefully you enjoyed this one. We will chat with you again very soon. Emergency brunch, people! Save some hash browns! I'll talk to you later.